Numbers told the story they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Wednesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeart Radio, YouTube TV. We don't care how you're taking us, and we just appreciate that you are, any which way. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. It's a numbers game. What's happening, Kelly?
Not much, man. How you doing?
I am well.
Good.
Good show you've crafted with guests here, sir.
Well, thank you.
Well done.
Thank you.
JVT.
No, but really, how are you doing?
That's right. That's what we were talking about before the show. When someone asks you how you're doing, like, how do they really care? What if I just launched into a lengthy...
Like, Kelly, well, I'm glad you asked.
You know...
I was meeting with the bank yesterday and 8 minutes of that.
Been waiting for someone to ask me this very existential question of how I'm doing. And just go on for 3 minutes about it. JVT will join us momentarily, talk college football. He's got college football plays. I like what JVT's doing. He agrees with the whole we don't know much about college football thing, and he's sticking with his bread and butter, the Mountain West. He's got college football plays coming up. Also some baseball from him. Will Hill from the Should Have Bet More podcast, talking all his baseball picks and beyond. Sian Najat on the Tour Championship. What is he doing? Is he betting 72 holes of golf? Is he betting the FedEx Cup? What's he doing? What's he doing here?
I love his betting card.
Okay.
I hope he wins a lot of money this week.
Let me guess, because you got the same stuff.
We have similar stuff.
Similar stuff. And then Jason Weingart from Under Cloud of Smoke. How many ways can Jason take a victory lap on Jackson Merrill?
Well... ain't done yet.
No, it's not. But he's taking it all right, though.
Done or not done yet? Not done yet.
Yeah, not done yet, but we'll see. Looking pretty good for Merrill ticket holders these days. Let us begin with tennis. We'll get to some baseball here momentarily as well. Tennis yesterday, we had a very good day that could have been epic. We deserved better. We hit Jakub Mensik as the big dog yesterday. I want to say it was plus 264. Straight set winner over Felix Auger-Aliassime. That was nice. And then Tristan Schoolcate came back from a two sets to nothing deficit to win in five in his match. Another dog. And we were off to the races. But then we did lose one pretty cleanly. And then we were up a break. We lost on Lerner Tien pretty cleanly to Artur Fies. And then we had a walkover. Lepchenko was up a break. And then the Erika Andreeva, JVT's favorite tennis player, Erika Andreeva, she quit early. Some people with PPHs, by the way, with paper heads, got the money on that after three games of tennis. And then Evelise, this is what turned it in from just, you know, not epic into just very good. Evelise was up 4-2 in the third as a plus 193 play, I believe she was, plus 195, pardon me. She gacked it. So that wasn't fun. But anyway, a solid winning day nonetheless. Today there are three plays in the U.S. Open. Again, VSiN.com/picks. Every host on the network, every guest on the network, every sport, it's all up at VSiN.com/picks. Four subscribers. Three today, one on the lady side. This is the one that is at a different price. And again, I put these in overnight, late night West Coast time. Peyton Stearns, plus 119 over Daria Kasatkina was my play on the lady side last night. Peyton Stearns is right about now looking at her. She's plus 104. Yeah, that's on the edge. That's on the edge. Certainly don't play it out of plus money. But that's what it was last night. The other two are very playable. Tomas Martín Echeverri, I got at minus 126 over Francisco Cerúndolo, two clay court specialists. You can actually get a better price on Echeverri by some cents, about 5 cents here at this point. And then Gael Monfils, Kelly, plus 164 over Casper Ruud in a... big-time match on paper anyway today on the men's side. You can get Monfils at about plus 155. That is definitely still playable. So Stearns on the ladies' side, if you can still get plus money. And then Echeverri and Monfils on the men's side in what has already been, just through the first round, just electric at the U.S. Open. And you have
sounds great.
Oh, it's just fantastic. And you have some of the big-time players that have, you know, wobbled kind of in their first-round matches but still came out clean. On the ladies' side, Iga Świątek won in straight sets against Kamila Rakimova yesterday. But Rakimova just sort of gacked the second set. Yeah. She had three set points, and she just gave it away to Iga. So Iga gets by in straights.
I watched a fair amount of that one. I was a little worried for your girl there for a bit.
Oh, I wasn't. I mean, she was up a set. I wasn't worried for the match. She's not going to lose to Rakimova, but she is in her head way too much. She's definitely way into her head. She overthinks. And she even admitted she got tight. But then on the men's side, it was equally, interesting. Jannik Sinner, who, you know, on the Beating the Book U.S. Open preview podcast that I do with Drew, that I did with Drew Dinsick and with Zach Cohen, our own Zach Cohen. One of the first questions I asked was, do you think Sinner's mentally with the whole doping thing is going to be a little out of whack? And he was. He dropped the first set to Mackie McDonald before he righted the ship and won in four. And then did you see Carlitos last night? Carlitos Alcaraz?
Only the very beginning.
So he was playing an Australian by the name of Lee Tu.
Yeah.
Lee Tu. First name Lee, L-I, last name Tu, T-U.
Actually, as you're talking about this, I'm realizing this was on TV number two, and I caught way more bits and pieces of this than I remember, but yeah, sorry.
So Lee Tu is this player who quit playing tennis for 6 years, and he's still in his 20s, by the way. He stopped playing tennis for 6 years. He was like one of the two best junior Australian players. Him and Tanasi Kokkinakis were like one and two. And then he just sort of fell out of love with the sport. And so he just drifted off. He didn't play it for 6 years. And so, you know, by the way, Kyrgios was...
I was just going to say, did I catch Nick Kyrgios interviewing him at some point?
Well, Kyrgios was in the booth, and then he did the post-match interview.
But what's he doing?
Kyrgios was in the booth, and they were asking him, like, Fowler and McEnroe, Chris Fowler and John McEnroe, like, do you think this guy even has a, you know, you think this is going to be a blowout, right? And Kyrgios is like, nair. yeah, they were like, what? You don't? And sure enough, this guy who had been out 6 years... took a set off Alcaraz, took the second set from him. It was just unbelievable to watch. And then they kept asking Kyrgios, Kyrgios is like, he's from Adelaide. Stranger things have happened. And they're like, really? Have they?
What is the Kyrgios update?
He's got this. He's got a podcast. He's like going to have a whole second career.
Was he hurt?
Yes, he's always hurt.
But
yes.
We were expecting him back, right? For a minute, we were. Okay.
Yeah. To play in this tournament, there was always a possibility, but I guess not. But, you know, it's funny with Fowler, too, because they were trying to explain when he said stranger things have happened. They both called him on it. They're like, really? Has it? And you could tell with Fowler, like, game recognized game, Chris Fowler. I hear you. Because he knew, he's like, even if he went down two sets to one, Alcaraz would still be an in-match favorite. So, tell Fowler knows what he's talking about with odds. Unlike Brett Haber from Tennis Channel, who kind of just knows it theoretically. You can know Fowler's actually done this stuff. But anyway, Carlos wins in four. But it was just an incredible, absolutely incredible match also.
I thought Osaka looked good.
Osaka looked great.
Yeah.
Osaka and Sabalenka looked the best in the first round on the ladies' side, for sure. Sabalenka just pulverizing the ball.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's great. Baseball yesterday, there was as far as the 2024 Major League Baseball season is concerned, something happened yesterday which was 4 months in the making, which is the Cleveland Guardians have finally gotten caught at the top of the AL Central. The Royals did so by winning their third consecutive game against the Guardians. They swept a doubleheader 2 days ago against the Guards. Do I call them the Guards for short? And then they beat them yesterday. By the way, there's a fourth game in the series today, which will determine who is in the lead, obviously, in the AL Central after today, because they're tied right now. Three games ahead of the Twins, by the way, who have drifted off a little bit. But this is, you remember Samich and Matt Brown, the handle, when we did our little in-network VSiN futures betting competition in baseball. Samich had, Samich and Matt had Royals to win the AL Central. And he was like, I think we're going to change that. I was like, don't do it. I hope they didn't, because it looks pretty good. The Royals, who I have in the World Series against the Diamondbacks at 400-1. So I hope it happens. But the Royals today take on the Guardians for that rubber match. It's not even a rubber match. It's really to see if the Royals can sweep the series. And it's going to be Bybee against Waka is the matchup today to see who takes. By the way, Guardians minus 155 favorites in this. Can we flash up the August? I guess it's a good opportunity to flash up the August current standings for those who have made a Major League Baseball bet in August. Eric Biggio from William Hill Caesars tweeted me yesterday. They're up for September. Who wants in?
Gil and I haven't talked about it once, but I'm gonna guess the answer is football's starting. We're good.
That's, you know what? I thought that was my initial reaction. I was like, okay, we've done it for five straight months. We finally had a bad one with the Mets. Probably won't do it for September. But shouldn't I just have 1 year where I did it every month?
Yeah.
Here's the current standings and all.
I mean, again, as your producer, yes.
Yeah. As a man who wants content, like we lack content during football season.
As your friend, I would completely understand tapping out at this point.
Remember the Diamondbacks 2-win lead a couple days ago? Poof. Diamondbacks 17-6, Padres 17-7. Each has 4 games left.
Look at the Cubbies.
Well, remember,
I feel like they haven't made this graphic many other months.
Remember, I had 2 season win totals this season before the season started. My number one was the Padres, who literally need to win 6 more games, and that's a winner on the over. And then the Cubbies, who now are trying to get it 2-for-2. Cubbies 15-8 this month, but they're not going to get there, right? With 3 games left and the D-backs and Padres having 4 left, it's really a 2-team race now to the top. Diamondbacks, remember, one on the tiebreaker of fewest wins, which they would win if it ended right now in August as well. They won it in July on that tiebreaker at Circa, and they dead-heated with the Mets, who beat the Padres last night. Oh, excuse me, beat the Diamondbacks last night by 5 runs, 8-3. So that's why we're in the win column tie anyway.
And a lot of this we just kind of think about when we think about betting markets and compare it to the actual sport. But, like, they need to – MLB needs to, like, in-season tournament this up. Like, just give all these guys, like, cash for, like, best monthly record
so
or something. Like, that would be awesome.
And then best record in baseball, we have a tie at the top. Dodgers and Phillies tied at the top now. Clinging to a half-game lead over the Yankees for the best overall record in Major League Baseball, for those who bet that.
Just nutty. Like, that is...
It's a scrum.
Yeah.
It's a mosh pit at the top of baseball. We'll come back. JVT, not only on baseball, but college football. He's got plays. That's next. Numbers Game. VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Quick, Kelly. What rapper did Game Recognize Game?
I don't know.
It's impossible for you to answer. JT the Big Figure. Those in the Yay will know.
Yeah.
It's like a whole different language. It's like a whole different language. Jonathan Von Tobel joins us now, ladies and gentlemen, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. He is our senior NBA analyst. He's also the co-host, of course, of VSiN Primetime, where he does it with Tim Murray. And joins us now at MeJVT on Twitter. It's Jonathan Von Tobel, everybody. Talk a little baseball and college football with us. How you doing, man?
I'm good. You know, I'm excited. Obviously, week one is here, so we get to see all these teams. Football's back. I don't know about you, but I was texting with Adam Burke, and I'm very excited about the conclusion of this baseball season. It helps to have some skin in the game, but the season's been awesome from a storyline, a theater standpoint, so very excited for this time of year.
What are your futures bets that you are most excited about here down the stretch?
Well, the big one is, I don't know if you know this, but I was lucky enough to be invited to the All-Star Blackjack Invitational for Mike Palm and Derek Stevens, and I ended up finishing 5th in the Blackjack tournament. So I have a $7,000 free roll in the Houston Astros at 17-1 to win the World Series.
Let's
so
go.
We are, we're very much big Astros fans in this household right now. To the point where even my wife's like, hey, what the Astros do today? So so very much there, and I do have them to win the division. I've got some stuff tied into the Mariners to miss the playoffs, Mets to make the playoffs. I've got some Royals futures that look much better than I made back at the end of May.
Let's go.
Very excited about the way this could end. The interesting thing is, Gil, I've got this Paul Skeens 31 ticket as well to win NL Rookie of the Year, which has now become a little bit dicey too. So it's been really fun to track all of this stuff, and maybe that's why I'm so excited about the conclusion of the year, but a lot up in the air.
All right. Since you bring it up, I wasn't going to bring up Skeens versus Merrill, but we've gotten a lot of Merrill viewpoint on this show. As someone who is holding a nice Skeens ticket, how do you feel about it right at this moment?
I mean, I feel still relatively good. I mean, this might be a very simplistic way to look at it. I find it very hard that the kid who started the NL All-Star game for the NL and the All-Star game is going to walk away with the season with nothing, right? Like at one point, we were getting news of people selling their NL Cy Young tickets on him, right, for exorbitant amounts. And now we're going to get to a point where he's not going to get anything at all. He has been the best pitcher in baseball since he came up. Like that is a fact. And you could talk about all of the statistics. And I said this on the show the other day. The thing I don't like about, like, I think the downside of sports betting media as a whole is, whenever we have these conversations, it just turns into stump speeches, right, for your ticket. Like, this is why he should win it.
Yep.
But I do think that the and you, I'm going to steal, I've actually stolen your phrase, and I'm giving you credit for it. we don't know anything, right? The odds market is not predictive when it comes to awards. We don't know what these voters are thinking at all. And it might be a simplistic way to look at it, but I think a kid who is an absolute star, who had his moment in the All-Star game, who's been the best pitcher in baseball, I've had it hard to believe that he's going to walk away from this season with absolutely nothing.
I like that. A little point counterpoint. Merrill right now minus 175 at DraftKings. Paul Skeens at plus 145. And yeah, we'll see. There's going to be some award voters who are going to cling to their position on Skeens, much of which is based on what you just said, that, you know, this guy, let's not forget. And you're right. There was that moment. Now, I never bought into the Cy Young thing, but you're right. There was that moment in the season. Maybe it lasted a week. Maybe it lasted 2 weeks where people are like, Cy Young, you know, so we've come far from that.
Yeah, not that it should factor into the voting or the handicapping of this award, but what JVT says is correct. Like, it is just bizarre that he started the All-Star game and he's going to somehow walk away with nothing.
Yeah, stuff changes quickly. I mean, look at that. We're just talking about the Guardians of the Royals. I'm just like, think about how quickly that changed. The Guardians were up, I want to get this right, they were up seven games. Though they've led the division since April 14th, 154 days, right? But then the Royals are 23-13 since the All-Star break when they trailed the Guardians by seven games. So, I mean, this stuff changes so quickly in so many regards. What did you land on in baseball today, sir, if anything?
So I actually only have one bet. I bet the Orioles and Dodgers game over the total today. I bet over 8.5 at minus 110. It's still out there. Forgive me. I don't have my contacts in. That's why I'm squinting. But I think when you look at the matchup, look, we've seen Burns get knocked around quite a bit. The hard contact numbers are up there. I think that this Dodgers line is going to be able to get to him. And with Walker Buehler, look, the guy's been struggling. And I thought it was pretty telling, Gil, that even out there against the Seattle Mariners, he still looked pretty mortal, right? Every single pitcher's going out and setting career highs against the Seattle Mariners in terms of strikeouts and attempts. I mean, his own teammate Gavin Stone went out there, struck out 10 against him last week. Buehler looks pretty mortal against him too. So I think you're going to be able to get some action here. I know the market's moving in that direction. We're starting to get the juice to the over, but I went over 8.5 in this one tonight. That was the only bet that I had in baseball.
All right, let's go to college football. Speaking of stuff that nobody knows really what's happening with transfer portals, as witnessed by week zero results and line movement. I like what you did here. By the way, VSiN.com, so many different sports represented, every sport in the betting landscape represented at VSiN.com. JVT happened to write about college football. You stuck to your Mountain West wheelhouse. I like this approach.
Yeah, I mean, look, like you said, right? I even think I referenced it in the article. I don't think anybody knows anything, right? The market got its face kicked in over the weekend, and the market generally is a pretty sound way to look at it when you're talking about those who shape it. But I do know that I follow the Mountain West. I used to cover the Mountain West. I wrote about the Mountain West for our guide. So why not just stick in the realm of what I think I know? So every single bet that I've made thus far this weekend, outside of one, I did jump on the number in the Charlotte James Madison game when, I don't know if you saw Biff Poggi in his sleeveless shirt come out and say, like, yeah, half our guys are hurt. So I don't know what's going to happen this weekend. But for this, yeah, that's what I decided to do. And I think out of all of the games that I bet from a Mountain West perspective, the one that I do like the most, I would say, is Wyoming on the road against Arizona State. The Cowboys are a team that I'm really high on. I bet them at 14-1 to win the Mountain West Conference. They did lose Harrison Whaley, the guy who is expected to be their starting running back, but they have their top three rushers back from last year, so you still get some continuity there. Four starters back along this offensive line. And remember, this is a team that won nine games last year, Gil, and surprised many people, including Texas Tech, who went out there to Laramie and ended up losing that game. And you get Jay Sauvel, who takes over a head coach. It is a change because Craig Bull had been there for a while, but Sauvel had been the defense coordinator for the last 3 years, and he gets 6-7 guys back on his defense. So I think this team is being pretty undervalued. And in fact, I think the Mountain West as a whole is kind of being undervalued for the most part. I mean, over the weekend, they went 2-1 against the spread. Hawaii, the big favorite, was the lone disappointment. And you can see some other signs of that, especially when you look at Oregon State and Washington State and the way that their schedules are, coupled with their win totals and the fact that there's this blind belief that those two teams, because of their schedule, are just going to win 7.5-8 games. And I don't believe that because they're playing mostly Mountain West squads. So I'm kind of coming in thinking the Mountain West a little undervalued. So I went Wyoming plus 6.5 in this spot against Arizona State. I also think a small play on the money line is worth it. I think this is much closer to about 3.5-4. So that was that's my top of the three that I bet. If I'm ranking them, I really like Wyoming in this spot this weekend.
All right, we'll send people to the website. JVT's also got thoughts on Colorado State at Texas. He's also got thoughts on UNLV at Houston. Other Mountain West teams, obviously, in that article, Colorado State and UNLV. We have a few minutes. We weren't going to talk NFL, but I am curious, before the season starts, to get your final thoughts, the Jonathan Von Tobel sort of perspective on what is a opinion that you have headed into the season that you feel is based on just conventional wisdom, is more of an outlying one. And what is the, conversely, what's the one that you're hearing, the opinion that you're hearing, widespread, that you just cannot get behind?
So I think for that last one, it's not that I can't get behind it because I kind of understand it, but I do think the Houston Texans come into the season very, very overvalued, right? I mean, you're looking at a team that's quarterback is the second choice to win MVP. You look at their win total, their odds to win the AFC South, where I think you can throw all, it's the same thing every year, right? You can throw all four of those teams in a hat, pull one out, and I'll tell you, this is your champion. And you're like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. I don't think they're that far ahead of the teams in their own division, let alone, you know, the teams in the conference. So one of the teams that I kind of can't get behind in terms of where they're rated is the Houston Texans. And by the way, I think they do mirror the Green Bay Packers in the NFC, right? Like, they're both similar win totals, young quarterbacks, really making a step forward. There's a lot of expectation that they're going to be a lot better this season. And so those are two teams that I think mirror one another that I can't really get behind the hype coupled with the way that the market has priced them. I think one of the ones, I guess, that is non-conventional is I do think the Arizona Cardinals can be a playoff team. I think when you look at Kyler Murray coming back now healthy, he has Marvin Harrison Jr. I like their running back core. I think this offense is going to be one of the better offenses in the National Football League. And in an NFC West that I think does look a little bit more vulnerable at the top, right? The 49ers, I think, are not as strong as they were in past years. The Rams, especially defensively, I think have some real questions about how effective they can be both up front with Aaron Donald gone and on the back end when it comes to their secondary. I think Seattle can be very good, but I don't think Arizona's that far behind them. So when you look at the Cardinals and what they can be on offense, I think that this team is going to be a playoff team. And I think that kind of falls in the realm of a little bit unconventional. And I bet them over the win total. They were a good team last year. I thought part of the underrated part about them last year was everybody saw Gannon's like locker room speech. Remember all that weird one that he had that everybody laughed at him for? And he kind of flew under the radar as one of the better coaches in the NFL. So I think in terms of non-conventional, my love for the Arizona Cardinals, I think, is up there.
That definitely qualifies because everybody else, including myself, seems to have locked into the Seahawks as the
Oh, they're good, though.
Yeah, they're good. The de facto other wild card team, if you will. Last thing, did you bet any award in the NFL, any award market?
So I do have a couple. The one that really comes to mind immediately is I did steal. I've got a couple. So I bet Tua Tagovailoa to win MVP. Anthony I bet Jared Richardson. Goff to win MVP. No, and not Anthony Richardson, although I do love Anthony Richardson. And then the last one I would say, and I stole this from our former colleague, Femi Abebefe, Chop Robinson to win a Defensive Rookie of the Year for the Miami Dolphins.
Chop Robinson's 40 time would be the eighth fastest running back 40 time.
Whoa.
Yeah.
How about that little nugget from Chop? Thank you, JVT. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
At me, JVT, for Jonathan Von Toffel, everybody. Will Hill's on the other side. All of his bets, baseball and beyond. That's next. Numbers Game, the Sports Betting Network.
The numbers told the story they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. YouTube, TV, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, and of course VSiN and VSiN.com. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin live from Bar Canada here at the D. Lovely Las Vegas, Nevada. And I do mean lovely. It's majestic. Can we use the word majestic?
Yeah.
Sure.
Love when I get texts about texts or tweets about our commercials.
Oh, I love it. We don't hear the commercials. We don't know. We're not responsible. It's above our pay grade. Still to come, Jason Weingarten coming up this hour. Kelly with his tour championship thoughts. NFL week one, line moves and bets that we have. Oh, week one, just 8 days away. We get tweets at Beating the Book. See Najad, by the way, standing by. We get tweets. Trip Tepper. On yesterday's show, the idea was floated on fictional pro tennis player names for a Numbers Game. The best I could muster for Gil is Nomura Walkova.
I didn't see whoever first tweeted that in yesterday.
That's excellent.
Thank God you didn't bring that up at all, because I didn't catch that till after the show. Very clever. And yes, it's a good way to get Kelly fired. Let's not do that.
Trust the glove. You touched on it yesterday, but can you discuss how gambling may have impacted the awards market, voter betting positions? With the context of it was, in case you missed it, the context was that was it the NFL or the NBA? I can't even remember now.
NBA
came out and said, hey, if you have a vote on an award, you can no longer bet on that. We make sure you're not betting on this stuff. To which my reaction was, this wasn't in place before. And this explains, perhaps, our brains immediately go to, is that how Victor Wembanyama didn't get Defensive Player of the Year?
I just think it's stupid. I think it's stupid all around. I think it's the kind of like you said before. Like, is it kind of feels like this should be a thing?
Should be a thing
with every sport and every voter. However, at the same time, it feels like a what a courageous statement by the NBA. But like, you're not going to track any of these guys. So like, what are you talking about?
That's right. It is completely unenforceable.
Right.
In other words, Calvin Ridley betting a parlay in Florida. The NFL has been, you know, the NFL is vigilant about its players not betting. And so the casino let them know. Calvin Ridley used the very clever name Calvin Ridley on his account when he made this bet. That's one thing. But if, I don't know, I'm just going to throw out a name. If Tim Bontemps.
Yeah, Matt Holt, let me know how the Tim Bontemps tracking is going for integrity purposes.
Is voting on an award. Nobody cares, right? Like, nobody's going to bring this up, I don't think.
No.
I don't think.
No.
One more here, Brandon.
I don't even know. You'd have to, like, know and, like, literally capture him on camera or something, like, on your cell phone at the window. Even that wouldn't be good enough because you wouldn't know exactly what he's betting.
But it's like Tim Bontemps. I happen to use, like, a big name. What if it's, like, rando journalist from the whatever who happens to have a, you know.
Yeah, you named, like, one of the five voters that people might actually recognize.
That's right. Brandon Kyles, hope this isn't asking too much. Would it be possible for you to highlight your favorite tennis bet of the day for those of us who have odds boosts that one can apply? FanDuel offers them quite often. Appreciate the plays. Thank you, Brandon. It's an interesting question. It's all it applies to, like, even when we do our football picks everywhere. Oh, what's the one you like the most kind of thing? If I have one that has a particularly big edge, I will point it out. But generally speaking, there isn't necessarily one that I like above the other. And the problem is the lines move overnight, and so that might shift as well. But if there is an opportunity to do so, I will absolutely.
Yeah, this is an okay request. The one that we kind of hate is when you're like, hey, we got five NFL bets, right? It's even with, like, friends, right? And they're like, yeah, but your friend will be like, yeah, but what's your favorite? And you're like, no. Yeah. Like, I don't want to be judged by you on this one because I bet all four. But I get it when you're dealing with an odds boost that is different.
The people who you've just met, oh, yeah, real great favorite pick. You bet. I hit the other five.
Right, yeah, exactly. But you said the favorite.
Last one, John Fitzgibbons. How about Secreta Sushi Spot as the name of a tennis player for you? Though I suppose the sushi spot bit was never really about the spot. It was about the friends we made along the way. That's great. Sia Najad, speaking of friends we made along the way, Sia Najad joins us now courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, host and analyst for Monumental Sports Network in the DMV. You can follow him on Twitter at Sia Najad, S-I-A-N-E-J-A-D. What's happening, Sia?
What's happening? You're talking about favorite bets. Can I throw out a random MLB bet that
Please.
I like today, this
yes.
afternoon? Let's
yes.
catch a ticket real quick. Spencer Arrieta against Taiwan Walker. I'm taking the Houston Astros first five money line at like -115, -120. Sort of throw that out there. I dabble in the baseball streets a little bit.
Who are you? Who are you, Sia Najad, with a baseball play?
JVT likes the bet. He approves.
He approves. He's all about the Astros. He and the wife, they're all about the Astros.
The whole family.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk Tour Championship, the third leg, if you will, of the three tournament arc here. That is the FedEx Cup. We can bet this a couple ways, right? We have the 72-hole tournament itself, you know, as graded as a normal golf tournament would be graded. And then we have the actual FedEx Cup market itself, which has the starting strokes. How did you approach this, sir?
I approached it without starting strokes because the truth is, and anybody who's betting golf this week kind of knows, there's only a few guys that can actually win this thing because for the uneducated in terms of how this tournament works, you got Scottie Scheffler starting at -10, 10 strokes ahead of some of the guys that are starting at even. You got Xander Schauffele at -8. So really it's -5 and above. Maybe you can make the argument actually for -4 and above that are actually maybe in contention to win this tournament. So that like limits what you can bet with starting strokes. I will say, if you're going to talk about starting strokes, to me, I really think this is Scotty or Xander, and I know that's super boring, but those are probably the two that I would consider betting. I mean, Scotty hasn't really been good at this course, or at least not as good as like typical Scotty. Xander's been better. Xander's also been better lately. So I think between the two, Xander +250, starting two strokes back with four rounds to play, probably makes the most sense, but I do think one of those two end up winning. What I decided to do was bet in the without starting strokes market, which means everybody's on the same playing field, same platform, and at the end of 72 holes, who has the lowest score?
Okay. And Scotty Scheffler, by the way, excluding the starting strokes, is the co-favorite with Xander, both at 4-1. Then is Rory at 10-1, starting the double-digit odds brigade. So what did you do outright?
Yeah, so without these bonus strokes or starting strokes, I go down the board here. We see the board with Scotty and Xander. Listen, like Rory, I even think is a pretty decent bet. He's got good tour championship history. I went down the board to Patrick Cantlay and Tommy Fleetwood, and I understand those two names don't inspire a ton of confidence, particularly Tommy Fleetwood, because we know that, well, Kelly knows this as well as anybody. This guy doesn't win stateside, right, Kelly? But here's the thing. We don't need him to win this tournament. He's not going to win this tournament. This is a shadow leaderboard. So what better time, Kelly, to bet Tommy Fleetwood when he comes into a tournament knowing he has no chance to win whatsoever? The pressure's off. The stateside thing is off. And he can just play his game for four rounds. And for the record, he's a pretty good course fit, right? He's accurate off the tee. His weighted tee to green numbers are very good. He's good on approach. Can be good with the putter. He had a one bad outing with the putter a couple of tournaments ago. But he really checks all the boxes. And with the pressure being off him, I really like him. As far as Patrick Cantlay, I do like him just because the game is starting to round into form. He's got some good history here. I think 20-1 is a long enough number for Patrick Cantlay. Keep in mind the guys at the top, when we're talking about this shadow leaderboard without bonus strokes, they could play a little bit more conservatively, particularly on Sunday when there's just a couple of people jockeying for that $25 million tour championship winning money here. Those guys could play a little bit more conservatively, whereas your Cantlays and your Fleetwoods and maybe even your Billy Horschels at 33-1, these guys can really come out firing. They don't have a ton to lose by trying to max out their best finish over 72 holes.
So yeah, a bunch of course reconstruction, everything going on out there at East Lake. I know there were some comments yesterday from the golfers, Victor Hovland being one that was kind of shocked at how different it looked. Did that impact your handicapping at all of the event? Because I'm not sure it did too much for me, actually, at the end.
You know, I think the only point of concern probably for the players is that these greens are going to be non-receptive. They're going to be really hard greens. And so what does that really mean? To me, it means it lends itself to needing to be even more accurate off the tee so that you can come in with an approach shot that's not out of the rough that you can control, because I do think these greens are going to be really hard to hold out of the rough. So that's why, and you'll see with my picks, right, with the three names I mentioned, particularly Cantlay and Tommy Fleetwood, or I should say particularly with Tommy Fleetwood, actually, I'm looking for guys that are accurate, that are going to keep it in the fairway because of these greens. So that would be the only thing that would be kind of a concern of mine for guys who maybe are wayward off the tee and might have an approach shot coming off the rough.
And on top 10 positions for all three of those guys as well, Cantlay, Fleetwood, and Herschel.
Yeah, I hate to be boring about it, but I do like those guys to win outright, and I like the numbers in the top 10 market. Like, you're not getting top 40s here, right? There's only 30 in the field. You're not getting top 20s. You are, but those numbers are just prohibitive in terms of betting them. When you're talking about Billy Horschel and Tommy Fleetwood, they're starting at like -1, so they're not anywhere near the top 10. You know, I'm relatively speaking, they're not anywhere near the top 10. But when you look at who they have to pass in the form of those that they have to pass, and just the course fit for those guys, I do see them again over four rounds with the style of play that they have. I see them passing a lot of people over four rounds. And I think if you hit one of those two at +190 or +330 in Tommy Fleetwood, Billy Horschel's case, you're obviously cashing money. I don't necessarily expect to hit both, but I'm really trying to hit one of those two to top 10, Fleetwood, Billy Horschel. And of course, Patrick Cantlay about even money to top 10 this tournament.
Okay. What about first round leader, sir? Did you do any of that?
Well, here's the problem. There's not a first round leader market. They should have one for the shadow, first round leader market,
yes,
but they only have it for the bonus strokes. And that's not a market at all, because all you can really bet there is maybe the top three guys, and the number on those is terrible. I'm waiting for some of these fall swing events, like the Sanderson Farms. Like, we'll go back to first round leaders and we'll get some of these 60 and 100-1 shots. But for this tournament, like, for once, the first round leader market is just not good enough to bet.
All right. Cantlay, Fleetwood, and Horschel, both without starting strokes to win it all, and then finishing positions all with the top 10. Appreciate it. See you as always, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks, gentlemen. See you soon.
See you, Najat, again, the Monumental Sports Network out of the DMV, Kelly. Out of the DMV.
That's right.
District, Maryland, and Virginia. See you, Najat, S-I-A-N-E-J-A-D.
First Cut Pod he does with Rick Gaiman. Check that out. One of the best golf betting podcasts out there.
Yeah, man. We'll come back. NFL Week 1 line moves and the bets we have. We'll read more of your tweets. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Got your Survivor entries yet, man? You bought them yet? You got them?
No, I'm not in yet. No.
Me neither. I got to do it. Episode 4 of Circa Survivor, the quest for $9.2 million. That'll whet your appetite for this year's Survivor. It's tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, episode 4, five-part docuseries. Episode 5 is tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern. You follow the contestants as they make their all-or-nothing picks throughout the 2023 Survivor contest at Circa. Several VSiN hosts make appearances along the way to offer their advice. Episode 4 tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, VSiN.com, YouTube TV. Live broadcast on X. You can watch it either any which way, any of those three ways. Go to VSiN.com/Survivor for details or to watch previous episodes. Episodes 1 through 3 all up there as well. Episode 4 tonight.
And no, after we got off the air yesterday, we had Debbie and Ben back here at the book, fired it up on a TV and was watching
that's
the whole
right.
thing. Yeah,
that's right.
I was trying to talk to Ben, actually, and he was so locked in that he just wasn't even hearing me.
Derek Stevens and Circa itself obviously featured prominently in this as well. But I really think episode 4, I really think it steps up to the monetizing of the remaining entrants. They get into that discussion. And then again, the villain, Sean Perry, who, by the way, just plays it up. He loves it. He wears that coat like just comfortably.
I mean, like however you feel about the guy, there's no way he's a bad thing for the documentary.
No.
You know what I mean? You're doing a doc, you want a character like that.
By the way, didn't we book him and then right before the show he canceled on us?
Yeah, that may or may not be true. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, I remember that too. I remember that, buddy. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Jesse Welch. Wow. Today I learned that Gil has ownership of the phrase, we don't know anything. That is solid. Good for you, Gilly. So JVT said, I didn't say it.
Mm-hmm.
This is from Mike Alvarez. Oh, we love Mike Alvarez. These NIL deals are great for the kids to get what they can. I do miss the days of kids getting giant orange boats for playing somewhere. Oh, and how much is nil? That's from a Chrissy Andrews story time. My mishpacha, yeah. One of the great ones.
I do think about like these days though, where you now have these guys graduating, right, and going into the pros, graduating, whatever, moving on from college football, like. There has to be some sort of division in the locker room, right? Like if I'm a 30-year-old player who didn't get that kind of money when I was in college, and you know me, let's just pretend Kelly Bidlin's in the NFL. You don't think I'm saying something to every single one of those kids that's coming in every day? Like the whole like rookie pick up the tab thing. Oh my God, I'd be going overboard with that.
It's there's so many interesting quirks we don't know about. Also the player that is really good in college who gets the NIL deal but might not be good enough to get to the pros, does he, like, try to stick around college for as long as humanly possible?
Oh, yeah.
Remember there was Caleb Williams speculation about that? People were like, he'll just stay at USC forever.
Yeah.
Jim Devitt.
I mean, what's DJU doing at Florida State? Didn't he just do it? He's just, like, picking up a check wherever he'll go right now.
You refuse to say his last name, don't you?
Uangalale. Do I get it right?
Sure.
Close enough.
1995, Jim Devitt. Oh, let's go back to the Jim Devitt one, guys. 1995, Mariners. Always talking about the Will and I were reflecting on the great baseball one-game one-offs they used to have after the season, both for division and then wild card. 1995, Mariners come back from 14 games back in mid-August to force a one-game playoff. Randy Johnson comes in in relief to shut down the Angels. Awesome.
I do love them too, but like so I also great. Feel like I'm not as big of a baseball guy. I feel like if you're a diehard baseball guy, you're going to be like, we play all these games just to decide it with one. Feels like the soccer crowd with that like hates penalty kicks. You know what I mean? We're like we play this whole game and then we decide it with penalty kicks.
When I was a kid, I remember like on the first Monday in August. You could go home and watch like the Dodgers play the Astros for the NL West title,
mm-hmm.
A one game playoff, that kind of thing.
I thought they were awesome. I mean, they are like some of my favorite baseball games ever to watch. Like, and I'm including playoffs because you know there's a best of whatever series, best of, you know, coming your way. So usually, unless it's a game 7 or an elimination game. It's still not the one game means that much.
Kelly, I don't know if you know this, but Rob Manfred's got it all figured out. He's got it all figured out.
All I keep thinking this whole show is how I want the monthly leaderboard to be a thing. Pay
in
those
baseball?
Guys. Yeah, give like $1 million bonus to each player.
The greatest thing, I'm going to say this, the greatest thing that happened in terms of spiking any bit of modicum to baseball, even by, you know, any incremental amount of baseball interest was us doing those monthly baseball bets.
Yep.
Rob Manfred has no idea. That just garnered a lot of interest early on the season. Bobby Geddes. Going to need Kelly to start reading the tennis names with an Australian accent. No chance any actual names would be said. Well, no, you guys switched the tweet on me right in the middle. You can't do that. No chance the actual names would be. See what happened there? It's like two tweets melded into one. What is happening here? All right, never mind. We've had a screen tweet debacle.
I don't know if that was on us or
something happened there.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we didn't think there's a downside to reading the tweets on the screen, but we just found one. Apparently, two tweets got melded into one.
No chance any actual names would be said. It just ended there.
And then it goes into the other tweet. Okay. Week one, National Football League. 8 precious days away. And again, we're doing the Megapod, the first Beating the Book Megapod. Steve Fezzik, the special guest, remember we have, it's me, Will Hill, Todd Wishnev, and then a rotating guest every week. Steve Fezzik will be the guest for week number one. It'll be next Tuesday. Bets that I have made so far, and I kind of touched upon this when we talked about contest plays the other day, but I have bet the Arizona Cardinals. I got them at +6. I wanted to get it before it went any lower.
Yeah, no, that was... I don't know when I bet that, Thursday or Friday, but that's when it was crashing. I think it was Friday because I don't think we talked about it on Friday. I grabbed a +6.5 at 120, but it was the only thing left in town because there were 5.5 starting to pop.
I grabbed the Saints at 4. It's now 4.5 against the Carolina Panthers. I'm a little worried about that one. And then I have the Jets +4.5 against the Niners.
I keep adding. Keep adding. But I got a lot of favorites week one. That works out well, right? We all know exactly how things are going to play out week one.
You don't want that.
So what do I have?
By the way, I have not made the Eagles bet yet, which I will.
Yeah, you
I'm
did.
I'm debating the Falcons, yeah.
Okay, you did bring those two up. You haven't bet those yet, though?
No, but the Eagles one I should really make right now. Because I don't know how long that
is. Well, the Falcons one I'd probably be more concerned about getting a 2.5 on.
Well,
we're all gone.
Two and a half is gone on the Falcons, but 2.5 is a little bit of extra juice on the Eagles. So let me unlock that in right here.
Yeah. That one is actually, I didn't realize that one had gotten to that point too. That is 2.5 juiced everywhere.
Yeah.
Besides the South Point, of course.
And there's no excuse except lollygagging because there's so many bets that we've talked about that I have made. Oh, by the way, here are my futures.
For some reason, you could go across the street after the show and lay 2 at -115.
Where?
At Boyd.
Oh, at Boyd. Oh. You often remember that Boyd is right across the street? Because I don't. Yeah.
I went over there. This is one of those, the sports book casino money in, money out. Like, remember my MGM story where, like, I can't take money out of my MGM account at an MGM property? And, like, Boyd's doing the same thing. So I did go over there one day to take out money. And they're like, okay, great. Do you have your player's card? I'm like, absolutely not. And they're like, okay, well, you got to go get a player's card. And I'm like, well, where's the reward center in Fremont?
That's right.
You know? And I'm like, all right, like, I'll come back another time.
I didn't know if we wanted to do the futures here, but they're up on the screen. Bengals to win the AFC North. Made that a long time ago. Steelers under 8, under 7.5 wins. I give the whole write-up in the pro football betting guide part deux that we just put out yesterday. Puka Nacua. Not spelled that way, but nonetheless, Puka Nacua, offensive player of the year, 32-1. And then Jaden Daniels, offensive rookie of the year, at 7-1. Was happy to grab that. Here are the week one line moves that have occurred so far. Vikings have flipped to a 1-point favorite from being a 1-point dog against the Giants. The Bills from a 7.5-point favorite now, you know, in some spots got down to 5.5. I wouldn't play it at 5.5.
And if you're wondering, yes, I kind of just grabbed these at high points. These aren't necessarily openers or anything like that, but high points.
Bengals now up to 9.5. Seahawks up to 6 in their game. Seahawks are playing who again? Who are the Seahawks playing? They are playing the... Broncos.
Concerned. Yeah, Broncos. Yeah.
And then the Niners from 5.5 down to 3.5. At this point, I'm seeing fours also, but 3.5 against the Jets on Monday night. What did you bet so far week one?
I added another one yesterday. I grabbed Buccaneers at 3 against your Commanders because that is quickly going to 3.5 most places. It is 3.5 pretty much everywhere right now. I laid 3 at 120 with them. I think they might be my survivor play week one, Gil.
What are you doing?
Jaden Daniels, I think if you're going to go against him, I want to go against him early before he gets his feet underneath him. So I am looking at that. I'm not that high on the Bucs either this year, so it is kind of thinking of playing them week one, get a, you know, try to get a win, get them out of the way.
It's bold.
It's bold.
It's brazen.
It's not why I attack it. People always ask me about Survivor, like, you know, we're in week five, week six. Like, how's Survivor going? I'm like, I've been out for 2 weeks. Like, it's, it feels like it's like that every year. Yeah, I bet them yesterday. I did add them. Cardinals, we talked about. I got them at 6.5, luckily, but I'm laying 115 on that. 6.5-point teaser that Samich and I are both on. I don't know why I'm pointing at the chair like Samich is here every day. But Vikings up to 7.5. Bengals down to 2.5. Falcons laid 2.5 with Jags, Dolphins over 49, and Chiefs laying 2.5.
That teaser can't possibly lose, can it?
Oh, it's week one of the NFL. Anything can lose.
Can't possibly lose. Vikings, Bengals, from Kelly. Jason Weingarten on the other side. All his bets, NFL, and more next.